Moving on next, within popular diets is the I call no meat diets. Well, now, whether it's for moral, religious or health reasons, these diets all avoid meat. Some avoid actually any kind of animal product. So it kicks off with the well-known vegetarianism, which avoid meat, poultry and fish. There then are the vegans or veganism that do not eat meat, poultry, fish or eggs or dairy products. So think cheese, yogurt and milk. You then have some interesting variations. You've got your lacto-vegetarians, and the key is in lacto that they will eat dairy products, but none of the meat or poultry or fish. Ovo-lacto-vegetarians will eat dairy products and also eggs. Pescatarians will also eat fish and shellfish. The whole plant-based diet, essentially, I think, are the same as the vegans. Although I noticed the China study whole plant-based diet website has a category called eat sparingly category, which is kind of nice. And that includes nuts, seeds, dried fruit and sweeteners. I guess when it comes to cooking for vegetarians and these similar groups, personal experience, I've always found it's best to ask. In some ways, vegetarian's not a very helpful label. Why do we use rules to identify who we are and what we eat? Well, the obvious answer, I guess, for me is that rules define a club or a group. So your religions, your tribes, communities, diet groups all have rules that allow you to join, or rather to keep other people out. I do have quite a few vegetarian friends who are quite relaxed about the rules. Maybe they're less concerned about the identity aspect. But they have told me sometimes they get accused maybe at dinner parties of not being a real vegetarian. It's all about names and identities. So I suggested, well, listen, why don't you call yourself a healtharian or a balancedarian and just see what people say. Another popular diet is the Mediterranean. And I've left this to the end because it seems to be one of the most popular nowadays for its kind of moderation. Based on the diets of the sea of the same name. So you're Greece, Italy, Spain, characterized especially by high consumption of fruit and vegetables, grains and fish, as well as olive oil and a moderate consumption of protein, your poultry, meat and dairy products. Some advocates add that heavily processed foods, for example, your pre-cooked meals and added sugars should be reduced. Now, if all of this is sounding familiar, then don't be surprised, because it actually sounds very much like the balanced diet most governments around the world promote. To be honest, to me, it sounds like a big marketing campaign. Thoughts of the freshness, the bright colours, the sea winds abounding, all kind of linking us emotionally to those holidays on the sandy beaches, the idea of tradition, quirky cafes, and ultimately, health. Well, as a marketing campaign, I think it's doing a pretty good job. Look out on the internet and you can see how much more sexy the Mediterranean diet is compared to the government recommended guidelines. Well, that's it. Maybe I'm not going to be a healtharian or a balancedarian. Maybe I will become officially a Mediterranean. Oh no, hang on. That means I'm from South Italy or Spain. That doesn't work. Even worse, actually, it means I'm a sea. Never mind. On that topic of, I guess, silly names, I'm just going to wind up the bit of diets around some very silly named diets. Sorry, unusual named diets. Fruitarianism, fruit only. Raw foodism, can't remember what that is. Flexitarianism, you have to be able to touch your toes. No, apparently it's a vegetarian diet, but with meat at times. A kangatarian, believe it? Vegetarian, but they allow kangaroo meat. I wonder which countries you find the most kangatarians. The cookie diet, made famous by Sesame Street. It's a calorie-controlled diet in which low-fat cookies are eaten to quell hunger. The breatharian diet, this one is spooky, a diet in which no food is consumed. based on the belief that food is not necessary for human subsistence. I think this was a cult that disappeared, not surprisingly, about 20 years ago. The Shangri-La diet, eating flavourless food in between meals with your nose clipped shut so you don't even get a smell of it. Don't ask about the logic. There's the cabbage soup diet, you may have heard of, based on the famous Cabbage Patch Dolls. Actually, no, I'm a big fan of soups, but I do think variety is key, so I can't be see myself following that one. Anyway, these are some of the most popular diets I've come across. There are hundreds out there, but I think it's time to draw a line. I just want to say that I haven't put these in any order, and I have not attempted in any way to evaluate them because I am not a dietitian and I do not have the qualification to evaluate them. I will leave a link on the webs on the show notes that does evaluate them if you want an evaluation, but I would recommend you evaluate the criteria before you evaluate the diet. So I'm going to wind up this section with a kind of a final note on the reasons people go on a diet. Now, I came across a very interesting quiz on a website called Diet Versus Disease. And it does raise a question about why people go on a diet. You know, is it to manage a disease or a condition like diabetes, high blood pressure? Or is it to lose weight? Or is it about image? Is it about identity and belonging? Well, there are many, many reasons. It seems to me that many registered dietitians, and you know, these are the ones who know their stuff, favour dieting to manage disease or conditions or eating disorders, but not so much for your average Joe Bloggs who's just trying to get healthy. A lot of them promote alternative approaches such as intuitive eating or just having a balanced diet. Now, as I've been recently browsing social media, something's been nagging me, and I think I've realised actually what it is. And I'm just wondering if all of us are just pretending that our diets are about health, when really we just want to be slim and attractive to ourselves and others. I mean, have we been so moulded by this visual society where image and your body is so valued that we're now convinced that happiness and love lie in our bodies? Well, Paige Smathers, who's a dietitian, and she has the podcast Nutrition Matters, referred to a great exercise she does with her patients. And she asks them to write down 5 people you love and why you love them. And then look and reflect. Does your love depend on them being slim? I mean, do you love your grandma because she is slim? Now that puts things in perspective, doesn't it? I guess one point here for me is if people don't diet because of health, then our attempts to tell people that dieting doesn't work, i.e. doesn't make you healthy, are actually lost because health may not be the goal. Going to talk more about that later. Let's move on to part 3, ideas and actions that came out of my research. Well, lots of ideas. They're a bit mixed up, I guess, in section 2 about what I learnt. If you remember me talking about the messy reality of learning a while back in a blog post, it's not all linear, is it? But I think in this section, there are 2 new ideas that kind of come out of the last few weeks of learning. And I'll mention those here. The first one, in the form of a question, actually, all diets work because you reduce calories. But is this really true? And here I learnt about calories in and calories out. Prepare yourselves. The second, also a question, is why do people go for anecdotes more than science? So why is it that people will follow a diet that Bob down the pub has done much, you know, more willingly than they would a diet recommended by the Harvard Medical Institute? It's true, but it's strange. Let's look at the first one then. All diets work because you reduce calories. Is that really true? Well, diets work, they say, because they restrict some foods and so reduce calories. Therefore, you will lose weight. This is said by a lot of people who attack many diets, and explain that it's not so much the diet or the food that counts, it's the number of calories that count. Indeed, that, I remember, was the message from the recent research I discussed in my last podcast about low-carb versus low-fat diets. If you reduce the number of calories, you will lose weight. Now, that makes sense. Indeed, the website Diet Versus Disease has a great posting showing 77 ways to lose weight, all of them fad diets. But is it that simple? Do calories in equal calories out when it comes to maintaining weight? Well, prepare yourself, because apparently not. Now, the good news is that the understanding of this confusion may explain some eating behaviours. So, according to Dr. Clum, C-L-U-M, who's a graduate from Life University in the USA, who focus on holistic health, when we eat, our body self-regulates. So, if you eat fewer calories, hormones in your body get a bit annoyed and they start saying, "Oi, stop expending so much energy." And so your body slows down. Now, from a layman's point of view, that makes sense, right? I eat less, I feel tired, I feel lethargic, I slow down. In fact, your body makes you feel hungry, and so you want to eat more, and then you do. And therefore you balance. I guess the opposite should be true, that if you eat more calories, your hormones start telling you to burn more energy. Although this bit I'm not entirely convinced of, from my own experience at least. You know, you get stuffed and then I don't really usually feel like going for a run. Anyway, the main message is that hormones, especially insulin, are controlling your weight more than anything else. It's not primarily about calories, according to Dr. Clum. Now, if hormones are driving you to eat more, then that means our eating behaviours are being driven not by greed or laziness, but by a physiological reaction. Indeed, one that is very hard to control. Hey, all of a sudden, you or me putting on weight might not be our fault. Maybe we shouldn't be feeling guilty then. Maybe it's nothing to do with discipline or willpower. It may well just be hormonal. Now, the Healthline website goes on to explain that not all calories are the same either. Apparently, different foods create different changes in hormones as they have different metabolic routes. So maybe an example can explain that. There's an example that fructose, i.e. sugar, pushes up insulin levels, which causes more fat storage and so causes more hunger. On the other hand, protein boosts metabolism and boosts your level of fullness, causing less hunger and more satiety. They have a very different effect on the body. Now, that surely has big consequences for saying, well, it doesn't matter what diet you're on. If you consume fewer calories, you will lose weight. But apparently that's not true. It does matter what food you're eating. What you do eat makes a huge difference. Oh, well, do you ever feel like you're going around in circles? I certainly do. There is, though, a very entertaining, actually, and well-written post about this whole topic by Kevin Geary of rebootedbody.com. Great name for a site. He's also put an acronym to it, CICO, calories in, calories out. And here his post is quite entertaining about the debunking of the whole calories in, calories out stuff. Second, why do people go for anecdotes more than science? You know, I've always wanted to try and unpack this notion that, you know, people like the, well, it works for me, much more than they do balanced advice from professionals. Why is that? I mean, what's going on? But more importantly, I guess, what does it mean for educating people about good health? Okay, let's go back to basic marketing. People don't use logic to buy things. They tend to rely on emotion, and of course marketeers know that. In a similar vein, I suspect people don't make food and diet choices based on rational decision making, and most probably not based on science. We use emotions and cravings when we choose food and diet, and probably sometimes the desire to belong. Right, with a diet comes an identity, being trendy, cool or fit, and often a sense of belonging to a community too. Actually, as Caroline Ducker tells her in her blog Lavishly, the never-ending quest for thinness also has an identity. And that identity of the never-ending quest for thinness is a very difficult one to leave behind. And it may be a very good reason to continue jumping from one diet to another. Even though we're complaining about it, we probably like it. And of course, it's that identity of striving for an imaginary future, i.e. the slim me, that keeps you on the diet that doesn't work path. Well, our sense of identity and how we express it has also changed since the rise of internet and social media. Of course, the technology of social media does shape our identity on and offline. There's a very good talk by Ulrich Schultz, a TED talk explaining this. And really, nowhere is online identity so influential on behaviour as with young teenagers. Now, if you have teenage children and you're not sure how social media impacts and defines their identity, then you should go and listen to This American Life. There's a link to one of their audio blogs. It's an audio blog. It's a fantastic, entertaining audio blog. There's a link in the show notes to one of their blogs. It's one about high school girls, and it is fascinating. This one's not about dieting, but the dynamics of what's going on with the online and offline identity of these three girls is incredible. It's hugely relevant to their sense of who they are, in their social circles, and the role of body and beauty. You can see how it connects to dieting so, so easily. Go and have a listen to it. It is a big eye-opener. Unless, of course, you are a teenager. So, sense of identity can influence our food choices. Also, research tells us social behaviour influences our choice of food and diet too. There's a lot of research on that. And it's because of this role of identity and social behaviour or social practice that I think it's where much of the messaging about following a diet, or rather not following diets, and making science-based decisions is somewhat flawed. To be honest, I'm not at all surprised that the internet diet gurus, the weight loss fad diets, continue to be as popular as ever. Of course they are, because they understand how people behave and how people make decisions. I would have thought, probably, a few public awareness programs might benefit from better harnessing this understanding of how people make health choices. For example, presenting science first as a reason to follow a balanced diet, for me it's like telling somebody who's about to buy an Audi, it's like telling them the specs of the car engine. Well, hello, they don't care. They trust the quality of the engine, they trust the brand. What they want is comfort, the look, and most of all, the identity of what it says to the world about me as a Audi owner. What's more, my mate has one, and I want one too. So my little theory is the following. Instead of presenting a balanced diet, we could make it significantly more attractive by calling it the balanced diet. Bit of a tweak in the grammar, and you've created an identity. To be honest, identity, after all, it's not real, is it? It's all just perception. Then get some celebrities on board, pump in a bit of emotional connotation to the word balanced. How hard can that be? Invest in some sexy marketing, some nice rainbow colours, and Bob's your uncle. Indeed, put a few anecdotes first, put the science in the small print, and Bob is definitely your uncle. That is the way forward, I would say, to getting more people into the balanced diet. I'm coming to my final part, part four, how I feel about my learning and my own identity now. Well, briefly, I feel more and more confident that I don't want to diet, as in to lose weight. And I'm also becoming a very strong advocate of the balanced diet. I feel more strongly that I'm becoming a believer in moderation, balance and science. Whereas, funnily enough, you know, 6 months ago, when I started this journey, I thought I might start writing a paleo diet cookbook or something like it. But I don't think that's going to happen. Well, that's it. That brings me to the end of this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something new. If you want to continue learning, do go to the website, www.seriouslyfunfood.com. Sign up for the weekly newsletter, or better still, register for free, and you will get guides and there's free courses on nutrition and learning. In the meantime, have a great week. Take care.